Hello and welcome to Home is Where the Hearth Is podcast in the Inner Sanctum. Thanks as always for joining me. I have the window open. I say that by way of explanation because we have spring has arrived. It might just be a false spring. It is only the 12th of March. We shall see, but it says 83 degrees in the shade. So I have the window open, making the most of the warm weather after the winter. So if you hear a rooster crowing or some other outside noise, please tolerate it. I try to keep things relatively casual and not, if things worth doing, it's worth doing in an amateur way, to misquote Chesterton. Okay, so today we're continuing going through, in fact, this will be the final of the books that I'm going through the discussion questions for the course for Memoria College that I did in the autumn on imaginative literature. We've been going through all of them. We began with the Iliad many moons ago now, so it seems, and we're ending with some Shakespeare plays, and we're going to end with the final Shakespeare play, the final text in the course, which is Macbeth. So the next probably 3 weeks we'll be answering the 15 questions. Macbeth, as usual, I haven't bothered to read them beforehand to remind myself. So if I catch myself out and make myself look foolish, please feel free to laugh at me. Humiliation is good for my humility. Okay, Macbeth. Question one. How important are the three witches or weird sisters? Are they crucial to the plot? Do they introduce a supernatural dimension? If so, how does this impact the whole drama? So give the easy answers first. How important? Very important. Are they crucial to the plot? Yes. Do they introduce supernatural dimension? Yes. And then to expand upon that, if so, how does this impact the whole drama? Okay, so there is similarity. I often say this, there's a similarity between Hamlet and Macbeth. So in Hamlet, if you like, is the protagonist begins in a very bad place, a low place, a suicidal place, or a potentially suicidal place. And then through the practice of circumspection, prudence, temperance, grows in virtue and wisdom so that he embraces quotes from the gospel and embraces the self-sacrificial aspect of love at the end of the play. Macbeth is the opposite. The play begins with Macbeth being lionized as a hero, and then throughout the play he descends from that position of honor and integrity and someone worthy of the admiration of others into someone who ultimately becomes a nihilistic, suicidal mass murderer. Now, the thing about it and why I'm mentioning that in this context is the other thing they have in common, both of them, is the implanting, the infusion, the inclusion, the introduction of a supernatural dimension right at the beginning of the play. And again, this does, if you like, breathe the metaphysical life into the physical action. We know that there are forces at work beyond the philosophy of Horatio and indeed of any other materialist who is skeptical about the supernatural dimension to reality. In Hamlet, the supernatural dimension is in the form of the ghost of Hamlet's father. And he is an honest ghost, as Hamlet is at pains to prove, which means that he is a ghost who's in purgatory and therefore basically a ghost who is already on his way to heaven, purgatory being a one-way street. So the supernatural dimension in Hamlet relies upon Hamlet, first of all, learning that the ghost is who he says he is and not a demonic imposter, and then acting upon that honesty on the part of the ghost to bring the action to satisfactory fruition through the restoration of justice and order in Denmark, the removal of the king, The purging of the something rotten, which was at the heart of Denmark's decadent hard under the reign of King Claudius and his wicked servants. So that being so, the Macbeth, on the other hand, is the other way round. The supernatural advice that he gets at the beginning is from the Weird Sisters, or from the Three Witches, if you prefer, and it's quite clear and evident that these are demonic forces, that he effectively gets himself embroiled with black magic and the deception and lies of the devil. And in believing those deceptions, those lies, that basically they come true because Macbeth pridefully wants them to come true, and to his own self-destruction. Of course, he had his free will, and he could have seen the Weird Sisters for what they are and refused to have anything to do with them, and it would have been a very different story. So in both cases, the supernatural dimension in both Hamlet and Macbeth is crucial. In the case of Macbeth, that is the introduction at the very beginning of the play of the Three Witches or the Weird Sisters. Okay, question two. What is the nature of courage? What is the nature of ambition? How are both used throughout the play? Are they used for different or similar ends? Okay, well, insofar as courage is seen as a virtue, then it has to be seen as different from ambition, which, of course, ambition is really difficult to separate from worldliness. You know, the worldly ambition go hand in hand, hand in glove, like a husband and wife, like a marriage. They seem to be one flesh. That ambition tends to be worldly. That's why that those who serve Christ are supposed to be the servants of the servants, and not to have ambitions beyond the what you might call holy ambition of getting to heaven. So in that sense, certainly Macbeth is driven by ambition, and this ambition gives him, in inverted commas, the courage to do unmentionable things, and encouraged again in inverted commas by his possessed wife, who's the strongest character in the drama, probably one of the strongest characters that Shakespeare ever created, Lady Macbeth. So there's that sort of courage, in inverted commas, that serves ambition, which of course is despicable and destructive of innocent lives, as well as being self-destructive of the ambitious people themselves. Courage, on the other hand, can be the noble courage we see of those who refuse to become embroiled in Macbeth's plot, who have the courage of their convictions in opposing him. That, if you like, is the noble courage, which is the virtuous understanding of the word, and not the reckless courage of ambition. Okay, question three. Comparing Macbeth with Hamlet, in what ways might Macbeth be seen as the anti-Hamlet? Well, I did say I didn't bother to look at these questions beforehand, and I have largely answered that. Hamlet grows in wisdom and virtue from a position of despondency. Macbeth falls into a position of despondency through worldly ambition. They are literally diametrical opposites. Hamlet is the anti-Macbeth. Macbeth is the anti-Hamlet. As I've already spoken at some length on this, paralleling the two plays and the two characters, I don't think much else needs to be said. Question four. In both Macbeth and Hamlet, the supernatural dimension, made manifest in the witches and the ghost of Hamlet's father, respectively, is crucial to our understanding of the drama. Why is this supernatural dimension important, and how does its presence differ in the two plays? That's, I should have read the questions first. Again, I've largely answered that one already, although, again, just to reiterate one important aspect, that a supernatural dimension can be for good or evil purposes, depending upon where the supernatural source is. So that's very important, which is why it's crucial in Hamlet, for Hamlet to discover whether the ghost is honest, whether he is really the ghost of his father in purgatory, or whether he is a liar, one of the demonic minion of the Prince of Lies, who is merely deceiving him into killing an innocent man, King Claudius, and in so doing, condemning himself not just to human justice, but perhaps to hell. So that's important. On the other hand, Macbeth makes no effort to ask questions about whether the witches, whether the supernatural dimension is from heaven or from hell. He doesn't seem to be particularly bothered as long as he gets what he wants. And of course, if you get what you want in a satanic sense, you don't particularly want it once you get it. And that really, I suppose, is the lesson of that, that whereas Hamlet is very circumspect, one of the attributes of Hamlet's character often is that he doesn't act, that he's indecisive, that he procrastinates. I would argue that on the contrary, he tempers his recklessness. He tempers extremes by pursuing moderation, by actually looking for the truth and knowing the truth. One or two occasions when he's close to being reckless, he pulls himself back. Whereas Macbeth, on the other hand, is gung-ho from the beginning. And when he does hesitate, his wife ensures that he doesn't back out of the path of destruction and self-destruction on which he and his wife are engaged. Okay, question five. What is the nature of Macbeth's relationship with Lady Macbeth? Is it love? Does it develop or change over the course of the play? Of course, whenever we ask the question, is it love, we are really forced to ask the question that really must precede it. What is love? And of course, the key aspect of love is, from a Christian perspective, is self-sacrificial. It's laying down our lives for the beloved. When the beloved demands that we lay down our life for them in a selfish way, that regardless of whether we are loving them, they are certainly not loving us. And in the case of Lady Macbeth, it's her own ambition that she is basically, her husband is the means by which she and he will get the power that she desires and demands. And the fact that both of them are willing to, if you like, damn the other in pursuit of worldly ambition is itself proof that whatever relationship they have is not love in a Christian understanding of the word. And indeed, does it develop or change over the course of the play? When Macbeth at the end, in his sort of suicidal, desperate state at the end, learns that Lady Macbeth has committed suicide, and again, the act of suicide is an act of selfishness with respect to one's relationship with one's spouse. Clearly, you are not laying down your life for the beloved if you kill yourself and therefore leave the beloved bereft of your life and presence. So that act of selfishness on Lady Macbeth's part displays or betrays a lack of love in a Christian understanding of the word. And when Macbeth at the end of the play learns of Lady Macbeth's suicide, his response is almost one of indifference. I mean, it's who cares? Basically, we're all doomed, we're all damned. Life is a tale told by an idiot, signifying nothing, full of sound and fury, but signifying nothing. Nothing means anything, so why bother about anything? He's reached this lowest common denominator, reductio ad absurdum, where nihilism annihilates meaning, and that includes annihilates feeling, that he doesn't seem to have any real feeling for anybody, including his wife. Okay, well, that's the first five questions of the 15 on Macbeth. So I think that would be a good time, an appropriate time to end this week's Home is Where the Hearth Is podcast. Please do join me next week as we continue our discussion of Macbeth. Until then, thanks so much. Lenten blessings to you.